Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Of course, I'm here today, this first hour, with Anthony McCarthy.
Great to be with you, Mark.
Always. And on Friday, you had this discussion on your show, right?
Mark, a very emotional show. A lot of mixed, obviously, opinions about what happened. I had Justin Fenton from the Baltimore Sun call in for about the first 15 minutes and giving us a lot of background, talking about a lot of the interviews he's been doing and following up in Upper Park Heights. We also had a young man on named Shaquille Carbon, who is a junior at Northwestern High
School. I read
about
him in the paper, right.
He's president of the NAACP Council there at Northwestern. And he really put into context for us the relationship between a lot of young African-American students in Upper Park Heights, primarily, obviously, at Northwestern High School, and the Jewish community that surrounds the high school. And he spoke personally about several incidents that he had been involved in. He had friends who had been involved in confrontations with the Shamarin group. And so it was a very poignant show in that, Mark, I learned, as always, I had taken for granted. I've loved blues and worked with blues for years.
The Black Jewish Coalition.
And, as well as the Baltimore Jewish Council. Art Abramson is a dear friend and a good mentor. And I had taken for granted the relationship between the Jewish community and the African-American community, the deep civil rights history, and certainly you're a part of that, between our communities. But, Mark, there still remains a lot of misunderstandings, myths, and divides that are between this community. And it was frustrating for me to hear some of the very negative, harsh things that some of my callers were calling with on Friday. But it's a reality. And unfortunately, because of the timing of my show Friday evening, we weren't able to get any Jewish leaders who could come and be with us.
Right.
But hopefully this week I've been contacted after Friday's show by so many Jewish as well as African-American leaders who want to go on record as supporting this group. And so we're going to give them an
supporting
opportunity. Supporting
Shamarin.
And really believe that this group has been very involved in protecting that community.
And, of course, the other sense of that is that people look at Shamarin as a vigilante group.
That's right. An extremist fringe group is what the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance has called them.
I mean, and we had a lot of people call on this program Thursday when we tackled the subject.
That's right.
Doing open phones.
Mm-hmm.
And at least four or five people called in with stories of their own confrontations with sounded like Shamarin in Park Heights. That one woman called in about her son, who she said she was driving up the road and saw her son walking to their home, which is in a mixed neighborhood, mixed Jewish and black neighborhood, Orthodox Jewish and black neighborhood, and had to leap out of the car to yell at her son, get her son, because she's being surrounded by a group of men who jumped out of a car as he was walking towards their home. And we had a number of stories like that. So, you know, and what we want to hear, by the way, folks, is from y'all at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts about all this and about black Jewish worlds and how they intersect or for you don't intersect. And I'm going to throw out some things that may be a little controversial here. Maybe they won't be, but let me throw them out and see what you all think and what my dear friend Anthony McCarthy thinks as well. So I think there is, let me put this on the table. There's a long history between blacks and Jews in this country that is very tight, close, and tenuous. From the Jews who were the majority of European-descended people who fought in the civil rights movement were Jews, to the people who fought in labor and for civil rights back to the 20s and 30s were Jews. There's always been this tension in reality and in all the books you read, whether it was Baldwin's books or Richard Wright's books or any number of the great African-American authors you can think about. There are books around landlords and pawn shop owners and grocery store owners who were Jewish, and that conflict had existed. And also but close relations existed over some of that as well, and that existed. That's real. And let me put this on the table as well, that Jewish racism is real. It's there. It was there in my family, and it's there. It exists and has to be confronted where it does exist. And I'll also posit that because of the skewed nature of our world, there is a lot of black anti-Semitism that exists. I don't think the majority in either community fits those descriptions, but I think they're there. There was a Jewish kid that was attacked, his arm broken because he was Jewish, a rabbi that was stoned. By three people throwing stones at him. There's been more than one story about Shomrim. As I was leaving an event the other night, where a number of rabbis, ministers, and priests were there together to talk about their joint trip to the Holy Land, and this was a very interesting journey. Black and white ministers and priests, and the bishop was there from the Episcopal Church, and a lot of rabbis and others. And that I talked to some people on the way out about this particular incident. One person said to me on the way out, who was from the Jewish community, you know, there are a lot of right, as he put it, right-wing Orthodox Zionist Jewish groups that are racist. They hate Palestinians, they don't like black folks, and I'm afraid this is what this is. So, and maybe it is, and I don't, so, you know, I think that this deserves like an airing. This deserves us to deal with this in a very straightforward way. And I'm curious what everybody thinks about all this. Go ahead.
Yeah, Mark, and I was going to add, and I'm looking forward to the dialogue with our callers as well tonight about this issue, about those issues that you so eloquently laid out, and a deep history between these communities. But I know that there is beginning to be a fracture and a debate, even within the African American community, about who is speaking for the African American community.
I saw that in blogs.
That's
between
right.
Kenji Scott and CeeDee Witherspoon.
CeeDee Witherspoon, Hassan Giordano, a lot of people raising questions about when people step forward and say, okay, I'm going to lead this dialogue, or I'm calling for a meeting so that we can discuss this. Even some media personalities have gotten involved and saying they're going to host meetings between the Jewish community and African-American community. There seems to be this fracture, and it's growing very bitter and ugly. I read some of those blogs and people questioning other people's motives and trying to take advantage and exploit this situation within the African-American community. And so there is this debate, and I have been engaging in some of these conversations during the day as I continue to educate myself on this particular incident, but the history of our communities working together and, unfortunately, ongoing, continuous, as you said, tenuous relationship between the Jewish community and the black community. But there are questions about who should justifiably be calling the Jewish community to task and together so that we can have this dialogue. So I think that I'm looking forward to hearing what some of the African-American callers think about that. And one of the young men, CeeDee Witherspoon, who initially was very involved, has said that he was being pushed out of the leadership of this ongoing dialogue between the Jewish community and African-American leaders because he began to see that maybe not everyone's motives were as pure as he thought his were, to really figure out how we could look at this incident involving a 15-year-old boy and a grown man who assaulted him, has been charged with assault, and really look to the future of how we heal, how we bring together these two communities.
I have someone just wrote in from the Jewish community, and he suggested some people that we should probably have on the air to talk about this, and I think he's right, like Art Abramson and Lisa Gladden.
Mm-hmm.
But he also wrote this one paragraph, if I can share, that I think I should share. He said, a high school student suggested joint patrols for communities might have more to say or could expand on it. And I think that's something.
I do too.
I think this idea of having all Jewish patrols is a mistake.
Or forming an all-black citizens on patrol group for the area. I do too, Mark. I think it only further polarizes.
More divisive.
Mm-hmm.
We should have the communities need to come together and patrol together and get to know, cross lines with one another. And that's the only way we start breaking this stuff down. And some people may find that because of anti-Semitism and racism that you can't do it. Well, then you shouldn't be on the patrol. Or maybe you should be, because that's maybe one of the ways that you find other human beings be open. Anyway, he continued to say, could Nathan Wilner explain fervent Orthodox on keeping to self as religious practice, such as where men and women not related to each other, not shaking hands, sinuous, Jewish word, or modesty? And so that is a thing in the Jewish community where in the very Orthodox communities, like it is in some Islamic communities and other communities, that people do not shake hands. They don't touch another human being if they don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be taken as being rude and not getting to want to know somebody. And there are those things involved with this as well. So this is a complex thing. And let's see what our listeners think about all this. 410-319-8888. And Donald in Northwest, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hi, Donald.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Good
Welcome.
Afternoon, Donald.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me?
Yes,
yes.
We can. Welcome.
This is very interesting. It has some questions need to be asked. One question need to be asked. When the incident went down, when did the police find out who the person was that assaulted, or the persons, because it was several individuals that attacked the young man? The story seems to change in the newspaper. Initially, the story was that he, as they followed him and they stopped and they got out of the vehicle to approach him, he picked a stick up. As they approached him, he dropped the stick and he was assaulted. Next story comes out that it was a 2x4 with nails in it.
Yep.
Number two, the question becomes, when did the police find out who it was? Was it the first day? Was it the second day? Do you know of police informing folks and letting them know that they can turn themselves in? When the person wasn't turned in, no one talked about the possible or the raid that took place at the house. What was the warrant issued for? Was it issued for looking for the radio, and they just happened to find some unregistered weapons inside the property? Another issue comes about is that what happened to the story that got suppressed with the two vans that was painted, that was spray painted with SWAT stickers? From what folks are saying in the community, was that those persons of the Jewish community did that themselves?
Well, I think some of what you're saying really needs to be looked at. I think some of it is kind of, from my perspective, with all due respect, kind of borders on the kind of things we like to create in these rumors. I would seriously doubt that somebody would, you know, the Jewish community spray painting swastikas on the thing. It's happened. I mean, I've seen it happen before in our communities, and it happens, and it happens, and it shouldn't be happening. But I think that there are questions to be asked. What you're asking about that, I think that when he was not arrested and was given a chance to turn himself in, that's something that is always relegated to communities of privilege and people who have positions of privilege. Turn yourself in. Folks who are in the African American community, especially in poor working class communities, are not going to be asked to turn themselves in. That's not going to happen.
But also, according to answer one of your questions, according to the reporting that Justin Fenton has been doing, that it was a member of Shamrim that came to the site of the assault and, in fact, called the police. The police arrived on the scene and were given very detailed descriptions of not only the vehicle, but of the gentlemen who were in the vehicle. And so that all happened moments after the assault took place. And so the police were informed fairly quickly about the not alleged assault. The young man has actually been charged with assault, second-degree assault.
You're talking about the young man from Shamrin?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right, right, right.
And so who's 23, I believe.
And he was held in a $50,000 bail that was posted.
So,
yeah, I mean, I think
very good questions.
And they're great questions. Mm-hmm. I think those are the kind of things that need to be aired in a public forum. That's the police should be there. Others should be there. Those are the kind of questions that should be answered. And whatever's rumors has to be squashed and reality has to be put on the table. I agree. And I don't know the answer to all those questions. 410-319-8888. Donald, thanks for being part of the show. And Gary, you're on the air.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Gary.
This is a very, very, very difficult circumstance, and you know it has a lot of history behind it too. My own personal history, for instance, is, you know, as a 7-year-old boy being in the library at North and Elmont, finding the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, and while I'm reading Dr. Seuss and Three Billy Goats Gruff, I'm looking at the pictures of the graves and the other circumstances at the death camps. So this is part of what formed me. Also, the stores around the corner, the numbers on the forearms of the owners. So I have a very, very close affinity with Jewish people as an African-American person. And yet, as I watched the documentary on Link TV regarding Norman Finkelstein, and part of that and had some commentary by Noam Chomsky.
Mm-hmm.
I found myself.
Oh, right.
And then let's not forget Christopher Columbus was Jewish.
I think that's true, by the way. But I think that's more mythology than reality. But
right, anyway. Right. And let's not forget that the Jews were complicit in South Africa. And you know, there's a lot of culpability relating to Jewish people and the denigration of blacks here and abroad. However, I see the flip. I have a curse. You know, I can see both sides of something simultaneously, and sometimes feel fervently in an equal fashion on both sides. But one thing I find today in today's world. And I know that the situation in Park Heights is a microcosm of what's going on worldwide. You know, you look at the Palestinian situation. Jimmy Carter wrote the book Peace, Not Apartheid.
Right.
There's a certain very negative intransigence which too many Jewish people are turning a blind eye to. And, you know, too often Jewish people are given carte blanche because of, as Norman Finkelstein would say, the Holocaust industry. Even though I am definitely a supporter of Jews, I'm also a supporter of what the truth is and what is right. And there's my own personal conundrum, and I think what you're finding here with your listeners is the same thing.
Look, Gary, I think you raised a lot of issues here. I mean, it could take almost an hour just talking about everything that you raised. I think that, I mean, Norm Finkelstein and Noam Chomsky are among the Jewish critics of the State of Israel and Israeli policies. And I think that, and they have a lot to say that's very real and right from my perspective. And, you know, I think it is a very complex issue. Let me give you a little story. This, just to set this up, and may mean nothing to you, may mean something to you, just in terms of my family and what you described. I grew up in a home with people. Let me put it, here's a better way to tell this story. My daughter, Chelsea, who is a grown woman, was interviewed 18 years ago on my show and then by this woman who wrote this book about what it means to grow up black and Jewish. And she grew up, and she told them this. She told them this story. She said she grew up as a child in Baltimore, visiting my parents' home. And she says, I remember all my cousins in the Jewish side of my family with numbers on their arms who had survived the concentration camps. And I knew them. I knew their story. I knew what the Holocaust meant because it was in my family. But then I was in my mother's family's home, her grandparents, her mother's parents, where Willie Stone, who was her grandfather, my father-in-law, who grew up in Georgia, who was raised by his grandmother, who was a slave, and who fled the Klan in the South because he was threatened when he was in the South, threatened with being lynched in Florida and had to flee North, even though he was from Georgia. So she told these stories to say that there's this pain on both sides, and oftentimes that kind of pain thrusts communities at one another because they are the way they are thrust together, especially in our community here in Baltimore, which is very close that way. And I think that, you know, I think that I don't paint broad brushstrokes for any community to say that any community owes any community. I mean, you can't, like, create that kind of thing. I think when you talk about apartheid in South Africa, Jews were at the center of the ANC. You know, Israel and South Africa had deals that have to be condemned.
Most definitely.
Over weapons, over many other things. But it was the Jewish community in South Africa that formed the biggest bulwark among the whites of South Africa against apartheid. So it's a very complex question. But here in Baltimore, let's talk about Baltimore and what we can do about this. Let me read this email, and then we'll go right to the phones to Xavier, Mia, Ernest, Joseph, all of calling in. He said, Mark and Anthony. This is from Kimberly. She says, I live within walking distance of the 7 Mile Market, and I see the Northwest patrol cars often, but that is clearly not the group you're focusing on. I've been called upon to turn off a light or two in the 5 years that I've been living in this area, so I'd say that my relations with my Jewish neighbors are cordial, but not close. Nobody bothers anybody in my part of Upper Park Heights, but I can see that there's a clash between some mighty rowdy high school students and the rest of a very observant community. Some of the issues may be race, but some of them are class. IMO. No one is blameless, but we must stop now before things get worse, writes in Kimberly. 410-319-8888 is number here. Xavier, you're on the air.
Are you today?
Hi, Xavier.
Hey,
welcome.
Xavier.
First, let me say this. My daughter was the recipient of a wonderful program that's held in Park Heights where they send the children to Israel.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, this way, instead of learning things from my perspective about Israelis and Jews, she could learn things on her own. So I had told her I was a child growing up in the 60s, and I had young Jewish friends, and I didn't even realize they were Jewish until I got in my high school years. So that way, you know, your children don't grow up afraid or paranoid or those Jews, because those Jews are the same thing as those blacks, those white people, those Hispanics. Everybody wants their children to do well, and everybody wants to live. And that's pretty much how it goes down. Now, the other problem I have is this. You do have an adult allegedly attacking a child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what race he is. Let's lock him up. Let's get him either in jail or the proper counseling he needs, because it's generally speaking, I'm 52 years old, and there's not – I can't imagine a 15-year-old in Baltimore that stands a chance against me. And it's just not something I aspire to do. Lastly, I heard one caller last week talking about how the Citizens Patrol is usually operated, or its training comes from the Baltimore City Police. That is a huge problem, and I'll tell you exactly why. When I live in the community of Oliver, and the police had some gentleman that obviously wasn't from Oliver in the patrol car, and I was bringing one of my neighbors was helping me bring plywood from my basement to the front of my house because I was having some work done on my house.
Mm-hmm.
He pulled over and said, you know, this looks suspicious to me. And I said, why? Why does this look suspicious? I work during the day. I go to school at night. And when I have a spare moment, I'm working on this house of mine. Why does this look suspicious? And so then he just got in his car in a huff and just drove off. But the thing was, he had someone that didn't look like me, I guess, observing what goes on in my community. I'm thinking that perhaps police techniques and training as far as getting along or working with other people in your community that are not from your community isn't the way to go, because Baltimore City has a history of this polarity that they have here. And there's just no way that we can look at any models that have worked in the past, because truly there aren't any. Everyone's really got to just make up their mind. Listen, we all just want to live and start working there. Beating up a boy on the way from school, I didn't quite get what time of night was it when this boy was coming home from school.
I don't think he was coming home from school, first of all. I think that he was coming from a friend's home.
And if I remember right, it was during school hours, and he wasn't in school.
That's right. It was during school hours, yeah. I think he was at a friend's house. I better not. I recall vaguely hearing from one of the people organizing this meeting that he was coming from a friend's home and actually was not at school that day. So I'm not sure. Yeah, I better not say. But one of the points that he raises, he asks the question about the police training mark. And I tried to reach the police commissioner today because that seems like a very a sticking point for a lot of folks. My understanding, I talked about three police officers today who work in that district, and they were very clear. They do not train Shamrem. What they do is these gentlemen have radios, and they have direct numbers to reach not only the district commander, but other officers who are in charge. When they observe criminal activity or suspicious activity, just like it was explained to me by one of the officers, that I'm sure Ernest, who I think served as an officer
one
in that
callers,
district,
yeah,
also would probably tell us that they're not trained by the police, but they get information on how to report suspicious activity that any other group that would be patrolling a community gets the exact same information. This is who you call. you know, if there is a problem in the community, these are the protocols to use. They're not actually trained.
And what you just said is really important, because let me go back to the phones here, then we'll take a break. But that these citizens on patrol groups are not supposed to confront anybody. If they see something going wrong, they're supposed to call the police, not to take the law into their own hands. I mean, that's a very important point. That's the role of a citizens of patrol is to patrol your neighborhood, make sure things are safe. If something's going wrong, call the police.
And I think that this group actually has been called on the carpet before for taking some matters in their own hands and policing that community.
I think that this might be a time for the mayor and those people to intervene and to go up there and say, bring the communities together and say, you're going to have a patrol. We're going to have one patrol.
Mark, can I say something else real quick before we go to the break? This group actually enjoys an enormous amount of support from the political and elected leaders of this city, African-American leaders. I worked for Sheila Dixon. I remember during that period of my time with the mayor, we attended an event for this group where every elected official in that part of Baltimore was there presenting resolutions and declarations praising this group on their anniversary. They have a very close relationship with the elected class of our city.
And many people in the Orthodox Jewish community, which form a significant minority percentage of the Jewish community in Baltimore City, registered to vote and vote. 410-319. Can we take a quick call before we go to break? Yes, we can. Ernest, you're on the air. Hi, Ernest. Welcome.
Yeah. I was a police for more than 25 years.
Yes, I remember.
Most of the time I worked up at the Northwest, and I also worked in communication, dispatching calls. The whole time I worked up there, I worked in Sector 3. I never got any calls where Jewish people were attacked or hate crimes. Now, I knew it was some burglaries, and I don't think many other people got calls like that, because we would always back each other up. Now, at that time, they had the Northwest Citizen Patrol, and it was Rusty White, because he used the alias. Did you know Rusty White?
I know who he is, yeah.
Okay, he used the alias.
Mm-hmm.
But in the police department, he had free range, free roam of the police department, the Northwest District, and communications. Plus, we had a major that was Jewish, Major Weintraub.
So I remember him.
All the attacks that these people are saying that was happening up in the Northwest District could not have happened. And after Weintraub left communications, they had a Jewish major, Major Hyatt, in communication. So all this crime and stuff that was going on, it was no different than any other community. It was no exception. But this is the problem. When they started that Northwest Citizen Patrol, they had 632 equipped so that they could have direct contact with Northwest Citizen Patrol. They took two officers from the district and assigned it to the Northwest Citizen Patrol. I think it was Park Heights and Strathmore, to that little synagogue. And they didn't report to anybody in the police department. Officer Salson was one other guy. They didn't report it. In other words, they were getting paid by the city and being supervised by Rusty White and whoever other persons are up there. The other thing was that they were able to collect information from the police department. Record checks, warrant checks, and all this stuff through the police. That you should have a problem with that. Also, what they would do if those two officers were off, they would shut down a post and have another officer go up there and ride around in those.
Okay, so what is all this saying to you? I mean, what do you?
What I'm saying is this. No other cops on patrol had this type of operation going on where they could check people's records, call DMV, get record checks, and all that kind of stuff. The second point is, I don't know too much about Shamrem, but if it's three people in a car, one person driving, two people get out of the car, they said that the boy threw him down, and he come up, and the other guy was in the car, hit him in the head with a walkie-talkie, and then only one person charged, and then they all get in the car and go. Now, that's special treatment right there. That's never happened. As far as I could see, they're all a part of the crime. Mm-hmm. Now, they should have. This is what should be done. It shouldn't be no meeting. The meeting should be at the courthouse.
Well, I think that we have to get a break on this. I think, I personally think there should be a meeting. There should be a lot of meetings between communities. But I think that if what you're saying is right, the state's attorney should be investigating more than just the young man, but everyone who's in that van. And it's beyond that, because I think this is it would be an important statement, I think, to the rest of the city if that happened. And I agree with that. We have to take a very, very brief break and come right back. We're going to come right back right to the phones, Anthony McCarthy and I will, as soon as we return. On the way there, I want to remind you that the support for WEAA is provided by Chef Max Louisiana Cuisine, catering available for all holiday parties and special occasions. Open Monday through Thursday, noon to 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, noon to 9 p.m. Located at 4311 Hartford Road. More information, 410-319-6227. 410-319-6227. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner.
I'm Anthony McCarthy.
We're looking at what's going on at Park Heights. We were talking about the last caller, Ernest, during the break, and I think what we were both saying as well is that I'm sure the stories that Ernest talked about with Rusty White and the others
almost
are true.
I do, too.
Because I remember police back in the day as well, and there was a lot of corruption. There was a lot of crossing lines, and I'm not saying it doesn't go on anymore. I don't think it's as prevalent as it was.
And I'm almost certain, Mark, that this group does not enjoy that level of access to police information he's talking about.
This has more to do with territoriality, more to do with distance between groups, more to do with, I think, fear. And I also think that, you know, I'm going to say it outright. I think and people from Sherman can come and say, you don't know what you're talking about, and you're wrong, which is that racism is involved as well. I mean, this is... And there's no question, given all the stories that I've heard from constituents in that community, and that cannot be tolerated nor accepted. And I think that it behooves not just black and Jewish leaders, because I get so tired of just black and Jewish ministers and rabbis talking to these people at the top, and liberals who love each other sit down and talk. That's not who has to talk.
No.
It's got to be between churches and synagogues and business people.
And neighbors.
And students.
Yeah.
That's who has to talk. 410-319-8888. Let's see, who's been on? Aaron, you're on the air. Oh, no, yo, Aaron, then we'll go to Joseph. I'm sorry, Joseph. Aaron, you're on the air.
Okay, hi. How are you?
Aaron.
Welcome.
You know, this dialogue allegedly is nice except for one problem.
What's that?
It's always the black folk who have to initiate the dialogue. Why isn't it that the Jewish folk don't have to come off the table with their dialogue? And in fact, Mark, if this had been a one-time incident with this group, I would maybe not be might be in favor of disbanding them, but Mark, these folk have had incidents going to bed. Not only that, the only elected official from that area who I've known to really have gone and spoken out against them is Delegate Jill Carter. In fact, during this whole incident, maybe you have, but I have not heard a comment from Delegate Sandy Rosenberg about this.
I haven't heard a comment made by any elected official other than the mayor of the city of Baltimore.
Well, and I think that, you know,
it's a difficult situation.
I think that, and I hear what you're saying about initiating a dialogue, and I understand that. I mean, it makes me think of some other things I've witnessed recently about where racism has taken place, like in the Eastern Shore, and people wanted, so black folks are not coming over to the dialogue, so maybe you need to go there for the dialogue, since that's how it started. But I think that in this, I really do think in this case that I would hope that community leaders on both sides, black and Jewish, and our elected officials say, we need to create this conversation. We need to do something. I mean, I remember Go ahead, Anthony.
No, I was going to say, Mark, to be honest.
But I understand exactly what you're saying.
I understand what Aaron is saying, but almost immediately, now I don't consider myself to be an African American leader in this city, but almost immediately after the event was made public, I heard from Art Abramson. I heard from Marlon Omansky from Blues and other. There was an enormous amount of immediate outreach on behalf of the Jewish community saying, all right, I want to be engaged in this conversation. How do I reach the people I'm reading about in the paper who are making these statements about this incident? I mean, there was some outreach on both sides immediately saying, hey, let's get ahead of this and let's look at this incident, but let's look beyond this incident as well to make sure there are no long-term, long-lasting I don't want to say rifts in the community because there's always going to be a certain amount of rifts.
There will be.
But the pain and suffering on behalf of both of these communities and certainly no damage, permanent damage done to the ongoing dialogues that do take place between these two communities. But there's something to be said about these young people at the school. When I talked to a group of them at Northwestern High School over the weekend, Mark, they don't understand Jewish culture. And in many ways, we have to, and the principal of Northwestern is really starting now to reach out, and there's going to be some dialogues and get-togethers and other things, because they don't understand why the Orthodox Jews are only walking through their community on Saturday. And they thought it was because they didn't want to deal with black students being out there Monday through Friday. And in fact, the Orthodox Jews are walking to synagogue on Saturday. That's why they can't drive their car. And there are, and Mark, on my show, a young man, and I was taken to task, but a young man referred to Upper Park Heights as Jewtown. And I told him, you know, I wouldn't participate in a dialogue where that phrase was used, that I found it offensive. We got emails. My producer got emails. We started getting calls from people saying, everybody calls it Jewtown. But that doesn't make
That's
it.
Amazing,
so, yeah,
right?
I mean, it just doesn't. So we definitely have some work to do with these young people. But certainly, I think if we education and understanding, Mark, goes a long way in helping us.
And it goes the other way, though, Anthony, as well. I mean, I think that the Jewish and black communities are so separate now, grew up in such different worlds, they don't touch. That the Jewish community doesn't. The Jewish community, like most other European-based communities in our culture. Their understanding and knowledge of black folks and black communities and African-American culture comes from the degradation of black people on the news and comes from TV entertainment. You know, it's Oprah and the paddy wagon.
Yeah.
That's
the extent of it.
You know, and I think it has to come across both sides. And I think that nobody knows anybody. We are so segmented and so separate in so many ways, especially in Baltimore. Most cities are like this, but Baltimore is especially separate.
It's a peculiar city.
It's especially
I love
separate.
This city, but boy, is it segregated, Mark. And we're so uncomfortable talking about it.
Really, we are.
We really are.
A lot of people are calling in. Let's get some calls in here. 410-319-8888. Joseph, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Hi, Joseph.
Joseph.
Welcome.
Several things. First of all, we know that the Jews...
Joseph? Ahead. Is Joseph there?
Hear me?
Okay. I didn't hear what you said. What are you saying?
I said the Jews have the money system. So
what does that mean? I really take offense to people say, what does that mean?
Well, let's look at the history.
No, let's not look at the history.
I want to know
what that means.
Jews have the money system.
What exactly
does that mean?
Okay, what that means is the money system that is in America today stems from the Jews. System.
That's baloney, man. That is so ridiculous.
Look at the history, brother.
Let me just say, this has been something that's been said for years. This is the kind of stuff that started pogroms that killed Jews in Poland and Russia in the 19th century, early 20th century. It was just those mythologies, this Elders of Zion kind of mythological crap that is thrown out of people. It's just not real. That it's the money, savings and loans in our society, let's say, a lot of them were started in ethnic communities, black communities, and the Jewish community, the savings and loans associations. Why were they started? Because Jews were frozen out of the banks. A Jew could not be a banker in America. So savings and loans began. Black folks could not be bankers. So savings and loans started in the black community, more in the Jewish community, but in the black community, because black community was completely discriminated against in segregation and had no money. But I think that this mythology about Jews and money runs very deep in human culture, and it really is far from the truth and is what fuels anti-Semitism and hatred. It's like saying, you know, all the mythologies we have about black folks, mythologies we have about other cultures. And that, to me, this is one of the great mythologies of the Western world, that the Jews somehow are behind the money system. And I expect you calling, Joseph, but I just had to throw that out there because it's just not true.
And the only way that we're going to be able to educate and inform is what we try to do, Mark, is to debunk a lot of that kind of information. We can't just let that kind of point be made and stand without challenging it.
Now, John Wesley wrote in on the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, and Valerie just wrote me a note saying, look at your Facebook page, so I'm doing it. He writes in, I have spoken about the presence of Eruv around Upper Park Heights on several occasions in the past. I have suggested as recent as the opening of the exhibit Beyond Swastika and Jim Crow at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum in April that the issue be fully discussed. The fact that the quote-unquote watch group included former members of the Israeli Armed Forces is, of course, alarming. However, this incident could have been easily avoided through honest, informed dialogue. And I think that's true. And I also was worried. I did not like this Special Forces, yeah. Israeli Armed Forces.
That was a red flag immediately to me.
It's, you know, I mean, it's not, those kind of things are not acceptable. Not in our streets. Tyrone Thorpe wrote in on our Facebook page, this should be interesting because I've heard of the group of Jewish men who patrol, Shrom Rim, I think is called, on 98 Rock with a discussion with Mickey Amelia and Josh Spiegel. So hearing this is a complete 180.
Interesting. That really speaks, Mark, also to my point that this group, as much as they are called a fringe group, and a lot of people consider them to be an extremist group, they enjoy mainstream support, not only from elected officials, but he's talking about a very popular commercial radio station that they evidently have a tight, close relationship with. So anyway, very interesting.
A lot of calls coming in. Let's go to Mia in Frostburg. You're on the air.
To Mia?
Mia, you're on the air. Can we pull her up? Mia?
Yes. Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Okay. This is Mia from Falston. And,
Falston. I'm sorry. Falston. Got you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I live in the community. Hello to both of you. And I just wanted to say that, you know, when they say it's an isolated incident, I think the extremity of it certainly is, you know, having someone actually beat a child, but young black males in the community kind of being targeted by these neighborhood watch groups is certainly not an isolated incident. And what has happened in the community is black residents and Jewish alike have kind of come together to a task force to almost fight against those who are poor and certainly the new immigrant community. And so I've tried to address that issue by putting together an arts and culture initiative in the area that celebrates all of our cultures, that has events that, you know, are surrounding those things that are in common to address this issue. And the community association in the area and politically, it wasn't something that was really pushed or supported because they didn't feel like arts and culture was something that was priority, a certain cross-cultural unity and communication wasn't a priority. So I sent out a statement saying, you know, this is exactly why I thought something like this was important, because it was only a matter of time for this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also important, a lot of outsiders are coming in, having this conversation, and our community is very unique. For the most part, we are very peaceful. We do keep to ourselves, and I think there should be more, because I've lived there for 10 years, and I honestly didn't know just some small things about the Orthodox Jewish community there. And there are very cultural things that sometimes causes a problem, like a lot of people that live, you know, in the cross country area in particular feel like they can't have cookouts because then they get complaints. And there are also Reform and conservative Jews that have a problem with, like, the Orthodox Jewish community. But for the most part, we all get along, and it shouldn't be, if we're going to reach for African American leadership, it should be from within the community. And I think what's happened is we've had Jewish voices from the community, and the only African American even thoughts are people that live in Lower Park Heights. And we are very much so present in the community. and we should be talked to. And certainly not only those middle class voices in the community, but also those who might be a little bit poor, who are more likely to be affected by these problems that exist. But for the most part, again, it's more classism, really, than anything. Race certainly has a part to play. And a community dialogue and some type of event or something is certainly needed.
Thank you, Mia.
I do appreciate that and you being part of this. And I think that which, and I'm glad you're in the community, and I'm glad in terms of your reaching out and trying to figure out ways to kind of bridge these gaps.
She does some outstanding work with young people.
You know Mia.
Mia is with the Friends Committee.
And she is right.
Dynamic.
American Friends Service Committee.
American Friends Service
Committee. Oh, I thought I recognized the voice. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that has to happen. I'd love to see some of the young Orthodox Jewish kids from the Talmud Torah, from the Orthodox schools, to meet with African-American kids across lines for activity. I mean, people need to start crossing these lines. Mm-hmm. People are very frightened. It is a very isolated community, and Mia's right as well. There are frictions and tensions between Reform, conservative, and some of the Orthodox community within the Jewish community itself. That stuff is very real as well. 410-319-8888. David, you've been holding on a long time. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. Good evening, actually. I'm calling, and I'm going to say this. This is just another in a long line of civil rights abuses of black people in this city with police support and with the elected, with the elected officials condone. Nobody is talking about this child's civil right to walk down a street. I mean, then we have people like Justin Fenton and Peter Herman on The Sun, and we have a police chief that vilifies black children as thugs and animals and criminals, people releasing private juvenile records that aren't supposed to be released.
Right.
And nobody talks about that type of criminality, illegal arrest. I spoke with a young man who was beaten on June the 10th by police and released, beaten, and he has all his documentation, and nobody does anything about the civil rights. These are federal civil rights violations. This was a hate crime, but Bill Field could go on television and he could talk about hate crimes against illegal aliens. Nobody wants to talk about hate crimes and civil rights violations. This is why we have these problems in Baltimore. And until we are honest about what is going on in this city with regards to law and order and the lock 'em up mentality and this drug war, this is all a result of that. And it's really a violation of civil rights that has not been addressed, and it should be addressed. This was child abuse. You're abusing children, and people were vilifying the child who was abused and not the abuser. This was reckless endangerment of a child. We had police kidnap, and nobody has addressed that civil rights violation of Michael Johnson Jr.'s civil rights. This goes on. I live in Park Heights.
Okay, but
I live here, and I know what not only just the showroom, but the Northwest Citizens Patrol. I had to confront them about my own two sons on Surrey Drive. I had to confront them. And this is the harassment of my sons ceased when I confronted them. But what about people who don't know their rights? What about people who won't stand up for themselves? You know, you just can't tell somebody you don't belong here.
Okay, David, I think the question of this being a violation of civil rights is a very real question. And I think it's one that I think has been raised, but really needs to be raised more, I think, in the public in terms of this conversation and by the press. I mean, I think...
I agree. But I would challenge one point, David, that you made, that no one's talking about these issues. You made a very blanket statement. You said you talked to someone, a young man that was assaulted in June, and no one wants to talk about it. I can guarantee you, if there's a young man, not even a young man, if there is a citizen that believes that they were wrongly abused or incarcerated by the police, if they contacted Mark Steiner, if they contacted Anthony McCarthy, there would be a thorough investigation on our parts and our staffs to find out what's going on. I can't imagine a time that someone has not contacted me about these issues. And I care about the things you talked about. I care about the civil rights of that young man. I care about the civil rights of all the people in our city. And oftentimes when you're given a badge and a gun, you think that not only are you the law, but you're also the judge. And so we have to be very careful about the lines that the police cross. So I don't think that no one cares about the civil rights of black kids in this city. I think there are a lot of people who spend their days and nights working to protect the civil rights of black children in this city.
Yeah, I think that maybe it wasn't raised enough in this particular instance.
Most definitely,
I agree.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have a lot of people still on the line here.
A lot.
And let's see who's been on here a long time. I'm trying to see. Clarence, are on the air.
How are you?
Hi, Clarence. Welcome.
I have a different perspective on the community associations. Me personally, I wish they did not exist because everybody in a community is actually on patrol. When you go about and form a group such as these people have, then you're distinguishing yourself. There's something special about me. No, there isn't. Everybody in that community is essentially a citizen on patrol and stepping out of his house or looking out his window and seeing anything going wrong in the community, you call the police. When you organize these types of organizations, in particularly something that has to do with the security of the public streets, a neighborhood, or anything else, then it's almost like it's a breeding ground for individuals with their own little personal pets and peeves to, in other words, get off on somebody when the right opportunity presents itself. And this last part, now, I've been up in that community sitting in front of a house in my cab on a call and have been pulled up next to and stirred down. Excuse me, can I help you? Oh, I'm just wondering what you were doing sitting outside the house. I'm in a cab. I'm on a call. I have a badge, you know? So that's one of the reasons why, I have I just don't like these type of organizations. You call the police. Everybody is essentially a citizen on patrol. You don't have to distinguish yourself or say, I'm special, and you reap the benefits of an organization through political support.
Clarence, I appreciate you being part of the show. And the last caller, yes, I'm being told? No? Yes? What are you saying? No, yes, no. It is the last caller, yes. So we have to take a break. So we have signals across the glass here.
I saw people going, yes,
no.
And then no.
Yeah. So I do appreciate this. It's a very important conversation
to
have. And I think that we can continue this, and I hope we can bring representatives from the communities on this program to have a conversation sanely with the rest of our community here in this program without screaming and yelling to address these issues. I would appreciate everyone's politeness who called the show today to talk about these issues that are very important. Anthony McCarthy, thanks so much for being here.
Great being with you, as always, Mark.
And have a great evening.
Thank you very much. I look forward to
when we come back from this break, we'll be talking about national issues. Should corporations have the right to free speech? Congressman Donna Edwards says no. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. For more information, www.mecu.com. We'll be right back.
If you want to know your history, you can find it in jazz music. Sterling Brown, the Dean of Negro Poetry and Literature. I'm Doc Manning, host of In the Tradition. We will pursue, define, and broadcast what Sterling Brown said some time ago every Monday night from 8 p.m. to 12 midnight here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
There are no requirements for membership to WEAA. You don't have to be a jazz musician or have a musicology degree. Just loving jazz and enjoying listening to it on WEAA, along with recognizing its value to you and the community. To be a WEAA member just requires picking up the phone and calling 443-885-2075 or join online at weaa.org. Thanks.
This is Leadership in 60 with Justin Jones Fosu, giving you powerful tools to strengthen the leader in you. A great leader's courage to fulfill his vision comes from passion, not position. John Maxwell. Have you ever said or heard someone say that my leader is horrible? If so, this person is not truly leading. A position does not make the leader, but the leader's actions do. And the really good leaders lead from a place of passion, something more than just what needs to be done. Are you in a position where you're passionate or perishing? If you're perishing, please keep your eyes open for an opportunity to leave and then lead by passion. At the appropriate time, you can find another place. For today is the day, and now is the time. For more powerful tools in leadership, justininspires.com. Leadership in 60 was brought to you by Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
A pillar in your community, Morgan State University Public Radio, 88.9 FM, WEAA, Baltimore.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We'll be joined in just a few minutes. You'll hear a conversation that we had with Congresswoman Donna Edwards, who introduced a constitutional amendment in Congress to say that corporate speech was not the same as citizen speech, and Congress should have the ability to limit it and stop it. We'll talk about that this hour, the effect of corporations on our democracy. We'll hear from Donna Edwards. We'll also hear from State Senator Jamie Raskin and Jeff Clements, who's an attorney who filed an amicus brief representing citizens groups arguing against expanding corporate First Amendment rights. All that coming up here in the next hour. Right now, we turn this over to WEA traffic here in Baltimore so you can check on the roads, check on that fire downtown to see which roads you should take and which ones you should not. Stay with us.
Support for WEAA is provided by Luna. Information on flooring available at luna.com/traffic or 877-241-LUNA.
Major fire activity downtown. Traffic is a service of Advil Congestion Relief. You're going to find major closures all along Baltimore and Holiday because of the fire. Started along the Baltimore and Holiday stretch. At this point, it has spread to multiple buildings, gone to four, if not five, alarms at this point, and various closures throughout the Inner Harbor and downtown area. Major delays if you can't avoid the area altogether. Working on a problem on the top side, Beltway. Looks like it's the inner loop right at Lock Raven where the left lane is blocked. We got word of a problem we're checking into on the outer loop at Southwestern Boulevard down in Arbutus as well. I do expect some delays coming down from Liberty Road because of that one. For more information, log on to SigAlert.com. I'm Matt Tacka with Baltimore Area Traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. We've talked a lot about the Citizens United ruling in the Supreme Court and what that did. And, of course, we also what it did in the last election, which was to unleash an unprecedented amount of corporate money into our elections, hundreds of millions of dollars that swayed this election. The question is corporate speech free speech the way we think it should mean in the First Amendment? As quoted for us, the citizens of this country, or is it something different? A lot of people would argue that as we look at what's going on in America today, that this new wave of corporate free speech has really threatened our democracy, has it? We'll talk about that this hour. I mean, the resources of large corporations are just absolutely staggering. When you look at the profits of corporations and what they can put into organizations, it's just unbelievable. I mean, what we saw in the election year, before we jump into our guests, this last election year, in congressional and presidential campaigns, political parties and public and political action committees combined, including corporate-run political action committees in our country, the amount of money, $5 billion. How do citizens compete against that in fighting for our democracy? Is it really a threat or not? Well, we're going to talk about all that this hour. In a moment, we'll talk with State Senator Jamie Raskin and Jeff Clements. But first, we're going to hear a conversation I had earlier today with Maryland Congresswoman Donna Edwards, from Maryland's 4th Congressional District in Prince George's County around Washington, D.C., who introduced a constitutional amendment enabling Congress and the states to regulate the expenditure of funds by corporations engaging in political speech that would not violate the First Amendment, our First Amendment rights. Let's hear the conversation I had with Donna Edwards. Then we'll turn to our live conversation here with our two guests and, of course, all of you out there at 410-319-8888. First, this conversation I had earlier today with Congresswoman Donna Edwards. This is Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Congresswoman Donna Edwards, who represents, of course, Prince George's County and other parts around the Washington, D.C. area and in Maryland. And Donna Edwards, welcome. Good to have you with us once again.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be with you.
So I'm really fascinated about this struggle that I just really came to my attention when I first saw your response after the Citizens United decision was made by the Supreme Court. But then again, from a number of people around the country who have been sending me information about this effort to create a movement around a constitutional amendment. But take us back to, for a moment before you talk about that, to the Citizens United ruling by the Supreme Court, what it said to you and your reaction to it. What launched this for you?
Right. Well, you know, at the beginning of this year when the Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission case was decided by the Supreme Court, I looked at that and thought, what a disaster. I mean, the court overturned basically 100 years of precedent enabling corporations to spend unlimited amounts from their own corporate treasuries on political campaigns for and against candidates. And, you know, I had no idea at the time, although I supposed that that would be true, that it would wreak havoc on our political system. And indeed, just as we've come through this last election, we saw corporations spending billions of dollars on political campaigns. And I think that it has really turned our system of democracy and elections on their head.
And your reaction, I thought, was pretty interesting the next day. I mean, you came up with an idea for a constitutional amendment that would overturn Citizens United.
I did. And I mean, really, you know, I had been, you know, really following the case for a long time as it made its way through the lower courts and into the Supreme Court. And recall, you know, what was written right after the court heard oral arguments. And so I really suspected that given the tenor of the questions and the briefs that were submitted, that the Congress would in fact, I mean, that the court would in fact overturn the decision. And in thinking about what that would mean to our system, I decided then, I said, you know what, this might be one of those rare opportunities where we may indeed have to amend the Constitution in order to fix this wrong that the court has wrought. And after seeing the decision and reading it, it became very clear to me that the one avenue out really is a constitutional amendment.
Something we'll talk about later in this hour with our guests, though, I received an email from Fran Corton out in Seattle, where she had one of the publishers of Yes Magazine. She was just addressing a church in Seattle about this issue, and the church was very excited about it. I think it was a Presbyterian church or something. They were very excited about it in Seattle. But one of the pieces she sent was that constitutional amendments are not for sissies.
Well, that's true, and I'm not a sissy.
No, you're not. I know you're not.
You know, a constitutional amendment is a very tough hurdle to overcome, but given what the court has done in saying, you know, corporations reach deep into your treasuries, whether you're banks or credit card companies or your oil and gas companies, you know, whatever interests reach deep into your treasury and go out and buy your election. And I think that that actually calls for something that's going to take more than a sissy to get up there and fight for it. And that's why I really strongly support this constitutional amendment that I have introduced that would actually allow the Congress to actually regulate our campaigns and our elections and the campaign financing, which the court said the Congress doesn't have the authority to do. And so it's quite a hurdle. You have to get basically, you know, a supermajority of the House and the Senate to agree and a supermajority of the state legislatures to agree. But we've amended the Constitution in the past, and so we can do it again, especially for something as important as protecting our elections.
What exactly is the wording of your amendment?
Well, in fact, you know, what's really interesting is that it's very, very simple. In fact, it doesn't even cover a half a page. And all it says is that Congress has the authority to regulate corporate expenditures for elections, and that there's not anything that would then stand in the way of the application of the First Amendment. And so what that does is it enables Congress to regulate elections, but to retain the longstanding tradition that we've had in protecting the press from any of this regulation by Congress. And so it's really simple. I think if I count the lines, it's probably, 10 lines?
Mm-hmm.
And it does exactly what it would need to do. And I think it's actually catching on around the country. We already have 26 co-sponsors, which anyone who knows the history of constitutional amendments know that most members of Congress never jump onto a constitutional amendment. Has a similar amendment that's actually been introduced into the Senate as well. And I think that especially as people have experienced this last election cycle and we move into the presidential cycle where every corporation imaginable can just sort of reach in and spend all of its money that it wants on elections, the American people are going to say, no. That's not what we mean by people owning our elections. We can't have corporations owning.
And you said in the Senate side, there are people who are agreeing with you on this amendment.
Exactly. And so I think that we are actually just developing a lot of momentum. And I think as folks have had an opportunity to digest really the debacle of what happened in this midterm election cycle with so much money that was being spent, and we didn't even know who was spending it. And I think it's important for us to have disclosure, which the court would allow. But disclosure alone is not going to stop these entities from spending the money.
And just finally, I wonder if you would describe what you think is the effect of the power of kind of corporate money, not just in this past election, but what do you think it portends for us the way it stands now?
Well, I mean, whether we're talking to citizens about the need to change our health care system, or we're debating foreign policy, or we're debating energy policy, or the role that banks and credit card companies can have in our economic lives, all of these debates impact corporations. And if corporations are allowed to spend unlimited amounts of their own money, what that means for the rest of us is it drowns out the voices of ordinary Americans who may only have $5 or no dollars to contribute to a political campaign or candidate. And so while I think that, you know, it's important for corporations through their lobbyists and others to be able to express their interest on policy, they shouldn't be allowed to drown the voices of ordinary citizens when it comes to making policy in this country. And this is something that's very fundamental. Most people, and the reason that we found such a tremendous response across the country to the constitutional amendment is because people know in their gut that what the Supreme Court did was wrong and that it has to be fixed.
Congresswoman Donna Edwards, thank you so much for taking your time on this busy day.
Thank you, and keep talking about House Resolution 74 because we need more people across the country getting their members of Congress, their senators, signed on to this this resolution. That's House Resolution 74.
We will do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. House Joint Resolution 74, sponsored by our own Donna Edwards, that you just heard here a moment ago, reads this way, Section 1. The sovereign right of the people to govern being essential to a free democracy, Congress and the states may regulate the expenditure of funds for political speech by any corporation, limited liability company, or other corporate entity. Section 2, nothing contained in this article shall be construed to abridge the freedom of the press. This would be our 28th amendment to the Constitution. It'd be a long haul to make it happen, but I think the conversation needs to start. And helping us start the conversation today, and yes, the people we have on the show today are all for it because we want to kind of even the playing field a little bit. And we'll have other discussions. Every side will be here, but let's even the playing field and let it be heard for a moment what we're trying to talk about here. We are joined by State Senator Jamie Raskin, who's been talking about things like this for a long time. He is a professor of constitutional law at American University and one of the founders of the organizations that we are talking about here, Free Speech for People. Jeff Clements is with us. He's an attorney who filed an amicus brief representing five citizens groups arguing against expanding corporate First Amendment rights. And we discovered him through our friend Fran Corton over at Yes Magazine when she emailed me with a link to his work. And we wrote to him right away. And State Senator Jamie Raskin and Jeff Clements, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thanks for having us, Mark.
Good to be here, Mark. Thanks.
Number here is 410-319-8888. Write to us and or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. What do you think about this idea? Are our rights as citizens and our free speech different than corporations? Should they be? What do you think corporations are doing to our democracy? We want to hear your thoughts on whether you think we need a constitutional amendment. So let me just start first, Jeff Clements, because we've not met you yet on the air here, at least not on our show. And your role in all of this, and talk a bit about what you're doing.
Sure, and I'm really glad to be here on your show. It's been a we've gotten an awful lot done since the Citizens United decision came down in Maryland and across the country, and it's been great to work with real leaders like Donna Edwards, who has, I'm so happy to hear from again on your show, and Senator Jamie Raskin, who both of them were right out in the lead after this case came down. They got it and have been incredibly powerful in their leadership on this. What my involvement was early on, I filed a brief in the case, as you indicated, Mark, on behalf of several citizens groups, democracy groups, arguing essentially that the court should stand by what the court's interpretation of our Constitution has been for really two centuries, which is that corporations are entities created by state law for economic reasons. They're not citizens and they're not people. This idea of corporate speech really didn't exist until a recent fabrication of the doctrine in the commercial speech area in recent years. And in Citizens United, for the first time, this idea that somehow corporate speech can stop the American people from regulating corporate money in elections, that's just unprecedented in American history. We made that argument in the brief. As we all know, we lost that argument, and the day the case came down, I helped launch Free Speech for People with Jamie Raskin and others. It's a campaign to amend the Constitution, to overturn Citizens United, and people can read about it at freespeechforpeople.org. And we're doing the work that Donna Edwards just talked about, carrying this message across the country along with her and Senator Raskin and thousands and thousands of Americans across the country.
Jamie Raskin, corporations are not people. That should be maybe your middle name. Talk a bit about Free Speech for People.
But what's so interesting about the Citizens United decision, which is hailed by the right wing as a big free speech victory, is that it did not give a single U.S. citizen any more right than he or she had to spend his or her own money in politics. I mean, if you were the CEO of Goldman Sachs or Enron, you could give campaign contributions to every member of Congress. You could spend tens of millions of dollars of your own money independently in any campaign you wanted, just like the executives and the members of the board of the corporation could. All Citizens United said is that the CEO can take money out of the corporate treasury, money that's been essentially put there by consumers or, you know, people who pay their electric bill or people who eat or whatever, take that money out and spend it to advance the corporate objective. And we've got to be clear that when you or I spend money in politics, the framers at least had the hope that we would act with enlightened self-interest. That is, we would try to promote our own interests, but we would try to promote the interests of our neighbors and our community. We'd have some sense of the common good and the public well-being. A corporation legally is bound to spend its money for one purpose and one purpose only, which is to pursue profit and to increase the bottom line of the corporation. So you've got to understand how radical a decision Citizens United is in the course of American history, because for two centuries, the standard doctrine, not just among liberal justices, but conservative justices, going back to Chief Justice John Marshall all the way through William Rehnquist, has been that a corporation is an artificial entity that possesses no political rights because it's a creature of the state and it's set up for economic purposes to serve the public, essentially, to go out and make money. And they've been fantastically successful at making money and producing things and so on. But we seem to have moved into a different stage of the market economy where the corporations essentially want to make money by going to the government, by going to the state and getting bailouts and sweetheart contracts and using their influence to do what the economists call rent-seeking behavior. And the Supreme Court has completely collaborated with them in this project, and it's created a real crisis in our political democracy, as we saw in the 2010 congressional elections, where we had a flood of congressional money that built a wall of right-wing propaganda across the country And it's just a dress rehearsal for what's going to happen in 2012, where it won't be hundreds of millions of dollars, but it'll be billions of dollars coming out of corporate treasuries.
Now, I'm going to go to the phones here because people are calling in already, but I want to come back and talk with you, unless our listeners raise it, the issues of what this newfound corporate power and money are doing to, you think we're doing to American democracy, and what it means to create a constitutional amendment. We should tackle that. This is when I talked to Don Edwards and looked at the piece Fran Corton sent me, which I'll share with our listeners on our website, that constitutional amendments are not for sissies, that this is a battle that could take a while, but it's an opportunity to create a discussion in America that we're not having. So we'll come back to that with our two guests. You just heard Jimmy Raskin. Jeff Clements is also with us. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page and throw your comments up there. We'll read them as well. Metro in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Is that Metro or Metro?
It says Metro, but it means Mitchell. That's you.
Yes. This is Mitchell.
Mitchell, welcome.
The great philosopher and educator John Dewey said that the next wave of fascism would be wrapped in American flag. What better way to legitimize that than to have the highest institution of law, the Supreme Court, to legitimize that?
Mark, first of all, I got to say, I got to love going on the Mark Steiner Show. It's the only place where the callers will quote John Dewey. So my congratulations to the caller. I love Dewey myself. Well, you know, the interesting thing is that there's not much of an American flag wrapped in this decision, because implicit within it, and I think necessary to the logic of it, is that not only U.S. corporations, but foreign corporations have an unlimited right to spend their money in our elections. You know, it would be very difficult to draw a line and say, oh, well, there's too much stock being owned by foreigners now, so you can't spend money here. I mean, basically, the court has said these corporations, you know, regardless of how much, you know, stock is owned by foreigners, get to spend money in our elections. And so we are, you know, empowering a corporate class above the citizens of the United States. And, you know, one of the shocking things about the most recent election was it came out that there were several investment banks that were that got bailout money, that actually put money into conservative 501c4 organizations, funneled money through these right-wing groups, that then gave the money to right-wing Tea Party candidates who denounced Democrats for supporting the bailout, and then beat them. But of course, they're going to Washington to serve the corporate agenda. And, you know, and that's the complete phoniness of the Tea Party phenomenon, that, you know, some of their rhetoric is of kind of an anti-bailout or anti-corporate nature. But the reality is, you know, as Jane Mayer showed in the New Yorker magazine, that the Tea Party movement is completely bought and paid for by large corporate powers, including the Koch brothers, who are, you know, oil magnates. And they've come to Washington. There's a nice article in the Washington Post today about how they've already started raking in the corporate dollars directly into their campaign. So, you know, the real campaign should have been about issues that were never mentioned: the Iraq war, the Afghan war, how we're really going to get people back to work, and the three great corporate catastrophes that basically weren't mentioned: the mortgage fiasco and crisis, that's a multi-trillion-dollar disaster; the BP oil spill, the worst unnatural disaster in American history; and the collapsing oil mines in West Virginia by the Massey Corporation, which ignored hundreds of regulatory violations and led to the deaths of 25 people. None of those things were mentioned in the campaign, because instead there was this propaganda about how the Democrats wanted to give Viagra to convicted rapists.
But before we go to our next two callers, Diane and Corey, but I'm going to just push what Mitchell was saying, though. But I think what Mitchell is saying is what you just said, Jamie. I mean, that and Dewey's quote was hopefully not prescient, that's exactly what happened. The corporations can mask their role and their agenda in the cloak of the flag wrapped around patriotic groups, which is what's going on and which is what they're going to do.
So I guess that's right. It's dressed in a Tea Party hat, or it's wrapped in the First Amendment, which is a complete joke. At the same time that, you know, you've got the Roberts Court completely demolishing First Amendment freedoms in other areas, so, you know, in the national security area, for example, they turn around and, you know, don the the wardrobe of the First Amendment in order to advance corporate power. Again, not increasing any single citizen's right of free speech in any way, but just allowing the CEOs to take money out of the corporate treasuries to promote the corporate agenda.
Now, Jeff Clements, this will bring you in here, then we'll go to Diane and to Curry, Corey. Playing on that, the idea of wrapping yourself in an American flag, and I don't mean to do it in a specious sense, but that to make create a constitutional amendment, create this conversation in America about changing the nature of who has a right to free speech in America, the people, not the corporations. This is a massive organizing effort, and it's a massive discussion Americans can have. And I'm going to posit that, because I can tell from my conversations with some of my very conservative friends, that this goes beyond liberal, conservative, left and right. This is Americans across the spectrum are worried about the power of corporations and corporate power in this country.
That's absolutely right, and that's what's the exciting opportunity here. I mean, Citizens United is a disaster, no question. It's a disaster for democracy, and it masquerades as a free speech case when really it's a corporate power case. And we are in a power struggle, we Americans, with multinational corporate power that sees the American market like it sees every other market, is how do you manipulate the government and maximize profit at the expense of the people. So it is exciting that the reaction to Citizens United, it's clear the court didn't fool many Americans. If you look at the polling, and it was done last February, it was done again in June, across the political spectrum, this includes Republicans, Independents, Democrats, it's close to 80% rejection of the Citizens United decision. And it's over three quarters, again, across the spectrum, Republicans, Independents, Democrats, supporting a constitutional amendment. So I'm happy to wave my flag along with every other American, as we did 27 times before, to make our democracy through the amendment process. We've overruled the court in the past when the court went off the rails, as it has here, in order to preserve our democracy. African Americans vote, women vote, 18, 19, 20-year-olds vote, we elect senators, all because of the amendment process, and that's what's happening now. I think there's just a groundswell, and it's not a right-left issue, it's an American issue.
Let me go back to the phones here at 410-319-8888, and Diane, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you so much. Before I come to my main question, I did want to say that I did a very silly satire that's on a YouTube called The Two-Headed Coctopus. I did that with a friend here. So
I want to see
a
that.
Lot of the information from the Jane Mayer article is in our silly skit. But I wanted to propose a different solution, and I would love to hear your guests' ideas about this. Recently, a group based in New England called the New Economics Institute held a forum in New York with several speakers, and a professor named Neva Goodwin, who teaches ecological economics at Tufts, put forward a term that I had not heard of before called sustainable human economy, or SHE. And what Professor Goodwin proposed as one of the solutions to this sort of out-of-control corporate power of government and of our country is that government, not necessarily at the federal level, but at some level, could revoke corporate charters of either revoke or withhold corporate charters of companies who are not contributing to this sustainable human economy. And that may be a useful way to address it would be to apply it kind of on an industry basis. And I'm just wondering what your guests think about that idea.
Jeff Clements, you want to start off?
I think it's an excellent idea. It's a terrific idea that there's a lot of talk about in a lot of the states, and it reminds us that corporations only exist because states allow the creation of a corporate charter. And so states and we the people through our legislatures should define the rules for what you get when you go down to the Secretary of State and you get a corporate charter. Most of the multinational corporations that we're actually talking about and that have that are benefiting from this decision to control our democracy, they're incorporated in Delaware. And there's no reason at all why the rest of the American people should have to live with Delaware corporate law when it has such an impact both in our nation and across the world. And Delaware folks should look at the corporate law as every state should to take control. This is really about who controls our country, and the way the people can take control is through corporate charters, and it's why we need the amendment campaign, frankly, because there is some question about whether if that went up to the Supreme Court, the court would do what they did in Citizens United, which is to back corporate power despite our history, despite the meaning of the Constitution, and say, well, somehow it infringes speech to put restrictions or rules on the charters. So I think we need to do all of these things, and we need to continue to push the constitutional amendment, because that's the basic proposition, that we're a government of the people, not of corporations, and that will help the charter reform, it'll help disclose laws, it'll help shareholder rights, it'll help all the other things that we have to do, but we won't be able to do any of those things if we don't ultimately take back control with the people rather than with corporations in this country.
On the way to a break, Jim, you want to add to that at all?
Yeah, well, I really agree with Jeff about that. You know, one reason why this decision has inspired, you know, almost universal revulsion across the political spectrum is it's not just an attack on one person, one vote democracy, but it's really an attack on the free market, the way that most people understand it and support it. You know, it's done kind of through the rhetoric of small business, but most small business people you talk to just laugh at the idea that they could be giving tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars in these campaigns. And they understand it's about the large corporations that basically have a parasitic relationship to the federal government and the ones that have the armies of lobbyists that go in to write the laws to promote their outcome. And, you know, the original liberal market economists like Adam Smith were very clear about this. I mean, Smith thought that economic competition was a great way to stimulate innovation and, you know, efficient results in the economy. But he said nothing's more dangerous than when you allow businesses to get together and collude as political actors, and said, essentially, if you get a bunch of businesses in a room together, that's a conspiracy against the public interest. You want them off doing their own research and their own innovation to compete with each other. But what we've got now is a corporate class that really wants to act as sort of a political agency in the society, and it's a very dangerous thing for everybody else. One thing I want to say about Maryland is we passed a revolutionary new law in the last legislative session called the Benefit Corporation Law that allows people to organize corporations that will both make money but also have a public purpose too. And we've, you know, already had dozens of businesses come to Maryland to organize as benefit corporations. You know, the progressives really need to make it possible for small business to thrive and to do whatever we can to support small business in this environment.
We have to take a very brief break. I have a lot of questions that came on my mind. It was Jeff Clements and Jamie Raskin were talking. We are talking about the proposal for a constitutional amendment, which we'll read again when we come back from this break to give you a sense of what is being debated about Citizens United and not allowing corporations to steal away the citizens' right to free speech in America. 410-319-8888 number here. Corey, hold on. We're going to come to your call as soon as we return from this very brief break. On the way, let me read something from the station here as we go in. Support for WEAA is provided by WEAA listener Alvin Darrell, who is offering up for adoption to a good home two English Bulldog puppies. These Bulldogs have all their shots, love children and other pets, and are housebroken. More information at ad4461@hotmail.com or 410-391-5313. I have a number of my listeners on Facebook ask about this, so get that if you want the dog. They might still be there. We'll be right back. Stay with us, and we'll go right to Corey, our first listener, as we return.
Support for WEAA is provided by
WEAA is proud to be a media sponsor for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra's Musical Instrument Drive. Drop off your new or used musical instruments anytime between now and Friday, December 17th at our WEAA studios. The donated instruments will benefit ORCIDS, the BSO's after-school music program that serves youth in West Baltimore. For more information, 410-783-8020. Baltimore County Economic Development, wishing residents merry holiday shopping from over 3,000 locally owned businesses in Baltimore County's downtowns. Rediscover the neighborhood spirit of giving with the shops and restaurants in Catonsville, Arbutus, Woodlawn, Liberty Road, Lansdowne, Pikesville, Reisterstown, Towson, Lock Raven, Overly, Parkville, Essex, and Dundalk. In Maryland, you are always welcome.
And the generous support of members like you. Thank you.
I love to entertain,
And my favorite way to do this is to play the best music I have available. I do this every Thursday evening on The Magic Bird Show. It's a program that features jazz, bop, swing, avant-garde, and contemporary. I also talk with the artists about up-and-coming projects and how their musical opinion shapes the art. So catch me, Bill Harvey, on The Magic Bird Show, Thursdays, 8 p.m. to midnight, right here at Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Have you noticed how much you rely on the Mark Steiner Show to bring clarity to the day's local news? Well, we're here to remind you that WEAA relies on you to keep programs like the Mark Steiner Show on the air. A gift of any amount makes a big difference in our ability to pay for the programs like this one you count on. Please call with that gift now in support of the Mark Steiner Show. 443-885-2075 or give online at weaa.org.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Do you agree with the notion that we should have a constitutional convention that says this? This would be our 28th Amendment. Should it pass? It'll be years in the battle, but a years in conversation America needs to have with itself. Section 1, the sovereign right of the people to govern being essential to a free democracy. Congress and the states may regulate the expenditure of funds for political speech by any corporation, limited liability company, or other corporate entity. Section 2, nothing contained in this article shall be construed to abridge the freedom of the press, written by and co-introduced by Maryland Congresswoman Donna Edwards. 410-319-8888 is the number here as we talk with State Senator Jamie Raskin, who's also professor of constitutional law at American University, and Jeff Clements, attorney who filed an amicus brief representing five citizens groups arguing against expanding corporate First Amendment rights. 410-319-8888. Corey, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Corey. Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. I am all for the amendment. In fact, I'm very proud that it was introduced by someone right here in the state of Maryland. And the other thing, too, that worries me is I'm very upset by the decision that was made by the Supreme Court justices. And I can't be the only one in the United States who shares this sentiment that there's something very wrong with that decision. And why is no one sounding the alarm on these people who agree with that decision? And can they be impeached?
Jamie, you want to grab this first?
Well, the answer to that question is yes. Will they be impeached? I doubt it. But I agree completely with you. It was a 5-4 decision where the Supreme Court actually had 4 or 5 other ways it could have decided the case on non-constitutional grounds in favor of the Citizens United group, in favor of their, you know, anti-Hillary Clinton video. That would have been very easy for them to say, for example, that a pay-per-view movie is not covered by McCain-Feingold. But they left over all of those other ways of deciding the case, which were judicially minimalist ways of going, and essentially wrote a new question. And it was a question that had not been posed to them in order to wipe out, a substantial portion of campaign finance law in America and to empower corporations. And so, you know, I'm somebody who is still shocked and scandalized by Bush versus Gore, but the Supreme Court there just engineered one election in 2010. In Citizens United, the court has essentially dramatically recast every election that we're going to see in American history from now on until we can somehow put the genie back in the bottle.
410, thank you so much, Corey, for that call. I think a lot of people feel that way. I think that this is a this is something that could really, a conversation could really take, I think, America by storm if it is done right. And Jeff Clements, I want you both to kind of respond to what you think the real threat, as you see it, to democracy is here. I mean, because people get so tired of politics, they're so tired of the partisanship and nothing happening on Capitol Hill, and a lot of that has to do with the power of corporations on that hill to manage and control the debate. Witness the tax cut debate right now on Capitol Hill and what's happening and how the stranglehold is taking over. So let's talk a bit about your perspective, Senator Jeff Clements, on what all this really means for American democracy.
Yeah, that's the reason why, and I would refer Corey and others to the website. We have a video of Jessica Sharp, a Maryland mother of a two-year-old, who wanted to know what she could do and found our website and went out and started a rally and started helping others organize to work for the amendment. And the reason, and that video is on the website if people want to see what Jessica has done and what others can do. The reason Americans are doing that is because this isn't just an abstract, you know, constitutional law argument, and it's not even a debate or a concern for those who are concerned about money and politics, although that's a grave concern. It's really about the soul of our country and whether we're going to have a shot at the kind of country that we all want and that we know we could have. And I think, you know, one way to look at it is the impact on democracy, and that's what we saw in the last election, is corporate money dominating the voting. But it's also what happens in between the elections, and it's what also doesn't happen in between the elections. And that's where you have Washington completely controlled right now by corporate lobbyists. And what Citizens United says is not only can we not solve that problem, but we're going to wipe out the laws in other states and unleash corporations in our state capitals and even in our towns and cities and school districts and so forth. And the consequences of that we've begun to see, because this Citizens United in some way is a culmination. It's a flat-out statement of what is already happening in these past two decades. And that's why you've got decline of the middle class, the destruction of the middle class, really. Where between 1950 and 1980, we had average income growth from $17,000 to $30,000. In the last 28 years, we've added $1,000. So the average is now, in 2008, was up to $31,000. That's not an accident. That's corporate domination of a government that should be for the people, and outsourcing of jobs, destruction of labor unions, denial of health care benefits, and instability for people with jobs so they can't move. The lack of innovation in our economy, as Jamie Raskin alluded to, because multinational corporations rig the rules. So if you're a small business or a startup or an innovative, green economy kind of job, you've got to go up against the Koch brothers and the fossil fuel industry. So it's about our democracy, but it's also about our economy, our environment. It's about our way of life.
Jamie? We lost Jamie, you still there?
I am indeed.
Good. Your thoughts on what this really means in terms of the future of our democracy. I think that people think that corporate power has been around for so long, it's been such a powerful force in American politics. This really is politics as usual. Nothing unusual is happening here.
Well, you know, I want to quote our last great Republican president on that one, Abraham Lincoln, who talked about government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And that has always been the ideal and the model for what we want to get to in America. But we know it hasn't always been like that. I mean, we certainly didn't start that way. And there are, you know, always groups that want to try to seize control and take power away from the people. And, you know, this is a struggle that took place a century ago with the populists, real populists, who, you know, struggled against the power of the big banks and the railroads and the trusts. And so it goes on. But, you know, the optimistic thing is that if you look at the Constitution, it reads as almost a transcript of popular social struggle for democracy. I mean, a majority of the constitutional amendments we've had since the Bill of Rights, we've only had 17 of them, and most of them are democracy and suffrage expanding amendments or political process perfecting amendments having to do with the Electoral College or what have you, that root democracy ever more with the people. So the constitutional amendment that Congresswoman Edwards has introduced, it's clearly going to be an uphill fight, and a lot of these amendments take years or decades to get done, but it's got the whole trajectory of the Constitution on its side. I think that the majority of Americans have already come to the realization that the agenda of whichever corporations have all the power right now, whether it's Blackwater or Enron or Goldman Sachs or whatever corporations exist before they end up collapsing because of their own criminality and wrongdoing, that agenda is not the agenda of the American people. And, you know, I believe in a market economy. I don't believe in a market society. I think we have to have a democratic society that has public priorities and public agendas, and that within the market, businesses should absolutely compete, and may the best ones win and produce and innovate and excel and make money and profit and so on. But what we've got now is corporations that want to use their economic might and power to crowd everybody else out of the political process and to essentially develop a stranglehold over government. And that's dangerous to the democracy. It's dangerous to the economy. And, you know, we are going to have to deal with it. And so the constitutional amendment is a great way to rally people, organize people, and let's hope at the state levels we will be able to compel at least some disclosure of what kind of corporate spending is taking place. And we'll be doing some stuff around that in Maryland in the coming session. In Congress, we hope that they can pass the Disclose Act. So there are things that can be done. But, yeah, ultimately, we need to reverse this terrible reinterpretation of our First Amendment that the five justices on the Supreme Court just pasted on it.
410-319-8888. Your thoughts. Do we need, and the lines are back open again, do we need a constitutional amendment that limits the right of corporations and the power they have in our government and in our country in terms of what we call free speech and the First Amendment rights? Do they have the same rights we do as citizens? 410-319-8888. So the question is, how do we get this conversation started? I mean, you, when we see what happened with the Equal Rights Amendment that did not pass, and the struggle it took to get that constitutional amendment even to be considered by all the states and then have it voted on by all the states.
Can I say something about that, Mark? The struggle for the Equal Rights Amendment radically transformed equal protection jurisprudence. I mean, the progressive justices on the court were able to interpret equal protection, which referred not to race specifically, but just to persons, were able to interpret it to extend the equal protection guarantee to women. And today, it's standard equal protection doctrine that pretty much every justice accepts that it applies to women.
So, I mean, and so on that note, Jamie, I mean, I think that the idea of what creating a movement for a constitutional amendment that says, and let me again, for people just tuning in, read what this amendment is that was written by Congresswoman Donna Edwards from the state of Maryland and submitted jointly with Congressman Conyers from Detroit. And that constitutional amendments, by the way, have to be passed by 2/3 of the House of Representatives and the U.S. Senate. And then it has to go to all the state legislatures, and 3/4 of the states within 7 years of the date of its submission have to ratify this. So this is a long-term process, but it's a conversation that America needs to have with itself. And it says, Section 1, the sovereign right of people to govern being essential to a free democracy, Congress and the states may regulate the expenditure of funds for political speech by any corporation, limited liability company, or other corporate entity. And Section 2, nothing contained in this article shall be construed to abridge the freedom of the press. So, should we limit the ability of corporations and companies and corporate entities to expend funds as political speech in our democracy? What do you think? 410-319-8888. And so how do you get this conversation started nationwide? What is the process that begins this battle to make it happen?
Well, one thing we can do is to begin by challenging political candidates to say they won't accept money from corporations or corporate interests or, you know, limited liability corporations or what have you, depending on what state you're in. I mean, I personally don't accept the money from institutions except for human beings. And, you know, it's given me a lot of independence. And, you know, anybody who thinks that if you get $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 or $20,000 contributed to your campaign or spent on your behalf by a particular corporate interest doesn't matter is too innocent to be let out of the house by themselves. You know, I mean, this makes a big difference in politics, and it does affect public policy in important ways. So, you know, I think we've got to begin to raise consciousness about it at every level, and, you know, to start asking candidates about what their position is on it.
Jeff?
And yet, to be clear, the conversation has begun, and it's begun in an exciting way. We definitely have a long way to go. But, you know, these amendments, people think, well, we don't do that anymore. It's important to remember that in the 20th century, we enacted, passed, and ratified amendments in virtually every single decade of the 20th century, except the 80s and the 40s. Other than that, we've been shaping our democracy with the constitutional amendment process, and the question is why have we stopped doing that? Because there's certainly it's time to do it now, and I think the conversation can be seen across the country. We've got over 500,000 people who've signed on to petitions and resolutions calling for an amendment, thanks to leadership like Jamie Raskin and Donna Edwards. We've got people in the states and Congress, state legislatures and Congress talking about it. We have state resolutions which can be passed and enacted and introduced in state legislatures calling on Congress to send to the state an amendment to ratify and overturn, to overturn Citizens United. And folks can do that in their churches, their communities, their any organization they're involved in. We've got draft resolutions up on our website. Feel free to download them. Petitions. Talk with your neighbors. Organize and send that resolution off to folks in Washington and in your state houses and continue the conversation. There's nothing more important right now for our democracy and for our country.
Let's return to the phones at 410-319-8888 as we talk with Jeff Clements and State Senator Jamie Raskin about the move for a constitutional amendment that would limit the rights of corporations to equate their speech with ours. And Owen, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Owen. Welcome.
I just wanted to correct to say, you know, I know legally that corporations are considered persons, and I recommend watching The Corporation, the movie. But to say that they have the same rights as we do, as people do, is sort of confusing and wrong, because they actually have way more rights than we do, because they have all the clout of the money and the power behind them. So, you know, to say that they have equal rights, you have to be careful, you know. I think they have way, way more rights than we do. Anyway, that's what I just want to throw.
No, Owen, that's great. And Jeff Clements, therein lies the rub.
I think that's exactly right.
Right.
The problem with giving corporations constitutional rights is that we have already given corporations extra rights in our state charters, and we do that for economic reasons, but we let corporations have unlimited life. We let them the shareholders have limited liability. The corporations get tax benefits and other benefits, and now they can use aggregated wealth to bury the average person, average man or woman, in our democratic process.
Well,
so,
you know, Mark, and I want to add this.
It's quite accurate that they do have more rights right now, and that's what we need to try to get a handle on.
Mark, if I can add one thing here, you know, the Bill of Rights was added to the Constitution when basically people with less power in America said that they needed rights against those people who do have power. The Bill of Rights was really meant to protect citizens against people who already have power. And so now the Supreme Court has taken a right that belongs to citizens, given to corporations, which are created by the state and which have enormous power, and so they have powers and rights. So I think the caller is exactly right. You know, there are a lot of unemployed people out there and a lot of poor people out there who at best are hanging on to their rights. They don't have the big-time law firms to represent them the way the corporations do. And the corporations now, they get the rights that the people have fought for, plus they get all of the powers they're able to buy with their money.
But we have, I mean, you can see the power at work right now. I mean, that if you look, there's a report that came out while we were on the air here that is in the New York Times, that the Republicans and Democrats are about to make these sweeping, pass a sweeping legislation, it says, that will ensure the tax cut go on for the wealthiest Americans, and that all that remains for at least 2 years. And the same issue with the estate tax and more. This is directly related to this question of where the power is, because here you have Democrats and some Republicans who would oppose this and have a majority but can't even get this passed in the U.S. Congress.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. It's appalling in a time when purportedly this wave came to Congress in order to address the deficit, and the first thing they do is extend tax cut for the rich people in America and try to bargain away the ability of the unemployed to even get a modest benefit for a few more weeks. And that speaks volumes, as you said, Mark. And, you know, interestingly, one of the early corporate speech so-called cases is a case called Bilotti versus First National Bank of Boston in Massachusetts. We had a law that said that corporations should not interfere and spend corporate money to affect citizen referenda issues. And one of the referenda issues is whether we should have an income tax in Massachusetts. And Bank Boston and Gillette Corporation wanted to pour millions of dollars to basically defeat an income tax that had nothing to do with corporations, had nothing to do with Bank Boston or Gillette's business. they just wanted to make sure that that we didn't have an income tax here in Massachusetts. But, you know, that's the kind of indirect effects. In Bilotti, it was very direct, but what we're seeing right now is the indirect effects of Washington just dominated by corporate power.
Let me return the phones. We have a couple of callers here, and I'll let them go in. I think John Willis, former Secretary of State, is on. John, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd just like to say...
Different John, sorry. Go ahead, John.
Okay, yeah, I'll just say I agree with everything you're saying about the corporations, and we've got to keep in mind they're controlled by these CEOs, and who have proven that they're willing to rob their own corporations and rob the government, rob everybody to enrich themselves, and they have no conscience whatsoever. And so that means that the whole corporation has no conscience and has just power, economic power and political power. And I agree with you. There should be a law against it.
Thank you, John. Let's hear from Betsy before we go off the air. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Mark.
Hi, Betsy.
I listen to your show all the time. I teach at Loyola, University of Maryland, and I just want to say that this is really about corporate capitalism, and it's really about the desire of capitalism in the U.S. to spread all over the world, and it's not just about corporations and corporate power. It's really about corporate capitalism, and we have to overthrow corporate capitalism in the United States because we're the belly of the beast. And I think your show is terrific, and this amendment is horrible, and it's going to impinge on all of our free speech. And let's overthrow corporate capitalism in the belly of the beast.
All right, Betsy, I'm only jumping in because we're actually out of time, and I want to say that all of you can go to the SteinerShow.org website and click on FreeSpeechForPeople.org to get more information on this. And I want to thank State Senator Jimmy Raskin and Jeff Clements for being with us, and you can link to all their work as well on our website. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
It's been a pleasure. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible in part by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns tonight are Shari Barnes. And congratulations, Shari, on your BS degree from Morgan State University. And we're very proud and happy that you happened. And Chris Walker, welcome, our new intern from Towson State University's film department. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find information about our guests and their work, visit us on our website at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.
Are you ready to take charge of your finances? I'm Wealth Coach Deborah Owens, and it's time to get financially fit in this new year. Make Wealthy Lifestyle a part of your weekly routine every Tuesday at 7 p.m. right here on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
There are no requirements for membership to WEAA. You don't have to be a jazz musician or have a musicology degree. Just loving jazz and enjoying listening to it on WEAA, along with recognizing its value to you and the community. To be a WEAA member just requires picking up the phone and calling 443-885-2075 or join online at weaa.org. Thanks.
Bereaved parents with young children are faced with unique challenges during their grief process. Gilchrist Center, located at 555 West Towsontown Boulevard, Baltimore, will sponsor an ongoing monthly support group titled PALS, Parenting After the Loss of a Spouse. The next meeting will be Wednesday, December 15th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. The program is free, but pre-registration is required. 443-849-8251. This has been a public service of 88.9 FM.
John Tegler here, host of Jazz Straight Ahead.
You know, jazz is the most misused word in the English language. You got smooth jazz and all kinds of things, but if you want to hear real jazz, the place to hear it is Jazz Straight Ahead. 8 to midnight every Wednesday night right here on Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Maryland Heralds make a difference in our community. WEAA believes in sharing their stories with you. If you know a nonprofit that is a true champion, our Community Cares campaign wants to hear from you. Tell us about the heroic nonprofits in your community. Nominate them as our next Community Cares recipient. It's easy. Email a brief letter sharing their stories with us to communitycares@weaa.org. And listen right here to see if your champion organization is honored as part of our Community Cares campaign. Only on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
Public Radio, 88.9 FM, the broadcast service of Morgan State University, WEAA, Baltimore.
I'm always paying attention, like so many musicians. We're so aware of what other people...